and I essentially doubled my revenue in 1 year, right? So went from, I think, 75,000 gross to 137,000 gross.
Hi, I'm
Wyatt.
And I'm
Grace.
And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our expert corner interviews with short-term rental investors willing to let us have a conversation and let you all listen in to the good, the bad, the ugly of their journey into short-term rental investing. Today, we've got Mr. James Oliger. And James, I appreciate you joining me. These are always my favorite conversations, and I appreciate you jumping on with us and allowing us to have it.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Like I said, this is my first podcast, so I'm feeling good and excited.
Love it. Awesome. Well, this is exciting for me as well. And I know our listeners love these episodes because they learn so much. Like we were talking about before we hit record, we want to share all the lessons learned and not always just talk about all the good things we did, but some of the mistakes we might have made so somebody else can avoid some of those mistakes. And so, it's always, I always am appreciative of you and our other investors that have come on and willing to share those. And so, but before we start, I always like to just warm up a little bit, get to know you, get to know your background, what pays the bills, where you're from, and then what got you interested in real estate investing and then ultimately in short-term rental investing.
Yeah, for sure. So I live out in the Seattle area with my wife and a four-year-old daughter. I have been in the tech industry for the last 18 years. I've been at Microsoft the entire time. Right outside Seattle. So, it's a great company to work for, but, as a lot of other folks that have kind of popped on the podcast in the past, it's, your mind after 18 years, you can kind of start, the mind gets churning on what's next or kind of what that what's that retirement strategy kind of look like. And I think also like a lot of folks, a lot of this happened during COVID where, especially, we were working from home and things were locked down, not much going on. And so my brain really started cooking. Apart from baking sourdough bread, I was like, how am I going to, come out with potentially a different retirement plan? And so I kind of started, generally interested in real estate, but hadn't really considered real estate investing as like a path I would take until, like I said, in the COVID times where I'm just like, you can really start pivoting your mind and kind of thinking, what's next. And so I actually kind of went down maybe a more traditional path with real estate investing. And I started more like in the bigger pockets space with long-term rentals, read all the books and got interested in, like the Burr strategy. And I kind of wanted to dip my toes in the water of real estate investing. And so I was thinking more along the lines of, purchase like a $100,000 duplex, right? And my first purchase was $110,000 duplex in Duluth, Minnesota, where we have family. And that's a market that is a cash flowing type market, but most markets that tend to cash flow don't have much appreciation potential, right? And I think during that whole process, I had come across Vodacy. I wasn't looking at the short-term, rental component of it, but when you're just kind of on all the boards and the blogs and all that, you're popping up because you are you got quite the marketing strategy. So I definitely kind of found you at that time and kind of had a conversation. But I was very hesitant at the beginning, not with Vodacy so much, but with the upfront cost of short-term rental investing is just a lot more than certainly getting a duplex, right? So I went down that route with the duplex and kind of learned pretty quickly that one, it wasn't very exciting. And two, like the rehab costs and everything that I had kind of thought with this Burr strategy, I mean, the rehab costs were astronomical, way more than I had like anticipated. And, this was like in 2022 where, things were just construction costs were kind of going nuts. And I'm doing the math on these things. I'm like, I'm going to need 27 of these duplexes to get like anywhere close to like a particular, you know, number that I'm going to feel comfortable at, or at least worth the while. So that's kind of how I got into it. It wasn't by any means like a failure. I think I learned a lot from the long-term rental space. It just overall wasn't very exciting. I felt a bit more like a slumlord where it was just, and there were tenants already in there, so I didn't really have to do much. It was very hands-off, which is fine. But I think after about a year, that's really when I'm like, you know what, this isn't very exciting. I think I'd rather kind of perhaps explore something a bit more in the short-term rental space in places that I actually want to go visit, right? So that's kind of when I pivoted, like in 2023, to potentially looking at short-term rentals. And I looked in the Washington area. There's a place called the San Juan Islands right out in Puget Sound. Beautiful area with orca whales and everything. But very seasonal market, strict STR regulations where you had to purchase a property that already had a permit, because if you didn't, you weren't getting a permit. And so it was very difficult to find a place out there. And so I pivoted to a place in central Washington called Leavenworth, which is really a Bavarian village in the Cascade Mountains. And it has fantastic year-round potential, just, you know, not only with the ski season and the Christmas season, but I mean, some of the best hiking in the country you can find in the Cascade Mountains. And so it's a wonderful kind of like year-round place. Got a 3-bedroom condo there. But this again, it was all before I kind of joined Vodacy. It was still like, you know what? I can do this. It's just, you know, I can do some research on the market. And I ended up, I think I've mentioned it, I ended up choosing Vacasa initially for property management. And it's because, you know, they were very accessible. They had all the technology. They had reps ready to talk to you at all the time. And they, you know, were cheaper than a lot of the boutique property management companies in the area. And so I'm like, you know what? This place is going to sell itself. You know, I think, you know, we'll kind of put it up there and see what happens. And I think within the first 2 months of me buying the place, and it was already rented, and so I kind of had just taken over some existing guests. Our HOA basically threw a special assessment at us because we had our insurance for the HOA dropped the HOA because of wildfire risk, right? And overnight, basically our HOA was under pressure to close a new policy within 30 days. And they were forced to sign up with the only insurer that would give them a policy. It was a 12x premium increase. And we all got hit with special assessments, and our HOA fees doubled, like more than doubled overnight. And that's when I'm like, oh my gosh, I think I can't just throw this up on Airbnb or Vacasa. I'm not gonna make out if I just kind of, you know, do the normal kind of path here. So that's really, I did it a little bit backwards. I went into it and I got hit with the, wow, you really need to up your game, because these things like insurance is all, it's coming at you, and it's coming at you fast. And I knew if I didn't do something big that this would probably not pan out, right? And so I think I joined Vodacy a week after I got hit with that special assessment, and essentially fully committed to doing the full, you know, full Vodacy program, because I had to. I felt like the numbers were already tight, and then to just get hit with this huge assessment and you know, doubling the HOA, I'm like, I don't know what else to do. So that's when I called you guys back. I'm like, will you still have me?
Yeah. And it's, you know, those are very tough decisions to make, you know, and credit to you for making that. I mean, it's very easy when things are already tight and you're already hitting with a bunch of stuff to say, okay, I'm going to like double down, and I'm going to spend more money to learn a different process. That process is going to cost me more money because we're going to raise the bar with the property. All those different decisions are tough decisions to make, and you really have to buy into the process. And so credit to you for doing that. How long were you operational before that change happened? And because when you got into this, so right, it was after the big COVID boom. You kind of went during the COVID time, you dove into the long-term rental side, started getting into short-term rentals as the market started to shift back to more normal levels, right? Sure. You didn't jump into short-term rentals when everybody was with the short-term rentals just making money hand over fist. You jumped in when rates were going up, when supply had gone up, everything was kind of starting to retract a little bit. And so you were feeling it from multiple angles right when you jumped in.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like kind of looking back, it probably was better that it happened that way, because I would have gotten a false sense of security otherwise, right?
Yep.
So I had to be, and I had known that there was kind of this big COVID, bubble in the short-term rental space, and it wasn't quite there. Not only that, I paid a premium for the condo that we got, right? Yep. Like, values were not going down. Short-term rental rents may be going down, but property values, especially, West Coast, mountain areas, they're just going up. And so I'm in a resort area where I know for a fact in our resort area, there's not a single person who has spent more on the property than I have. There's not much turnover. So that's one of the reasons that these are people that have been there either when the buildings were built or they've been in for, 10, 15 years. But we got into a newer building, they only built 8 3-bedroom units in this area. Most of them are 2, 1 or studios. And I'm the only one who wasn't one of the original owners. And so all of these things combined, basically, is like, I have to operate at the top of my game, because I feel like everyone else can just coast because, they got in before the COVID property rates went up.
And their basis is so much lower that they can, if it's just a race to the bottom or are competing on price, they can beat you all day long because your basis is so much higher, right? They're going to be able to beat you and still stay profitable at a lot lower revenue ranges than you're able to do. And so very interesting, spot to be in. We paid more money than everybody else in my market that I'm competing against.
I think I'm at a 7.5% interest rate.
A high interest rate, right? We're hitting all these things. And you did hit on something. I said one of the biggest disadvantages for people who jumped in during that COVID boom is they got a false sense of what this market is really like. And so it is an advantage to jump in and really realize the game you're playing. And to, again, to your credit, we're into 2025 now, into 2025. And we still have people that are like, I don't think I'm going to make these decisions and changes. I don't think I'm going to do all this stuff. And so you end up looking at saying, hey, listen, I've got all these things kind of really stacked against you when it comes to your competitors and everything else in the market. And it's like, you're saying, okay, how do I make it work, right? I'm committed. I bought this house. I'm kind of pot committed here. What do we do? You surround yourself with our community, and so that's kind of the start of it. But again, that's no guarantee because you still have to buy into the whole process, right? You still have to buy into the recipe we're selling, right?
End of October of 2023 is when I had joined. I hit the whole course and before I think the new year, and I was in. I was meeting with Mike, in early January. But you're right, it was tough because the only way to get to where I needed to get to was to spend even more money. Right. And it is, emotionally can be very difficult to take that leap, right? Yeah. Knowing that when you're already tight and knowing the only way out is to spend more, it's a tough sell. But I was very convinced with the process, just at least, seeing what other members had done. And so I just kind of had to, tell my wife that this is the path we got to go down and trust me on this. And because this is more, she's not overly... She loves going to the property, but she's not overly interested in like partaking in the management and the investment. This is kind
right,
of
sure.
So
the business side of it. Yeah.
I run things by her, but this is kind of like, I'm running this on my own here. So.
Right. And it's, I want people to realize too, when you're going down this, you are, using data to make some of these decisions, right? We're not going to say, hey, listen, just go spend more money, just go do this, because there is going to be, you know, we have to have some level of confidence that the consumer is actually going to spend the money in the market that we're doing this in, right? And so you are looking at a lot of those different things as well, helping you make some of those decisions like, okay, am I realistically leaving any money on the table? And you came to the conclusion that yes, you were. Now you have to trust that that conclusion is accurate, which is still very difficult, but it's not like you're going and guessing and just saying, hey, this is going to work anywhere. We really are looking at what is the revenue potential in this market. And if we put this money into this property, can we reach that potential? And those are, you know, again, not easy decisions, but it's also not just guessing either.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I spent a very fair bit of time in AirDNA, and there is just, you know, constantly ask the questions, how much can we trust these numbers? Is this really, really right? And, you know, at some point we had to say the numbers say that this can happen. We just have to kind of have faith that that's actually going to be the case, right? And so, yeah, we went into it with data, and then it's just, you know, a matter of, we got things, I was with Vacasa that entire first year, and part of that second half of that first year was working with Mike for the redesign, working with O2O, and I had given Vacasa my 90-day notice with them, because part of while I was doing all of this renovation work or the redesign work, essentially, I also got very interested in the concept of self-management, just because I found that I was constantly getting in contact with Vacasa and asking questions and asking them to tweak this and tweak that, and why didn't you do this and why didn't you do that? And I kind of realized, you know, after going through the Vodacy course, it's if our goals as investors are to operate in the top 1% of the market, you have to have like a top 1% property manager too. Yes. They're the ones delivering that experience. And it is very, very, very difficult to have a top 1%, you know, property manager in every market, right? You can't have like a PMI, for example, in every market. And unless you, I'm not saying it's, you know, it's not possible, but I think a lot of the folks in, you know, in Vodacy that are in the top 1% are self-managed. And I think there's something kind of to be said for that, because, you know, I've learned how much I desired to control the experience. I desired to control pricing strategies and revenue management and making sure that guests are taken care of. And when I kind of look back at like the fees that I was paying Vacasa and realized that cleaning fees are passed to the guest, and anytime there was maintenance, I had to pay for maintenance on top of that. I'm like, what am I paying for here? I feel like I'm paying for that front-end management, and I could do all the front-end management from the comfort of my own home, right? And so as part of like, I relaunched the property in September of 2024, not only in the Vodacy style, but also self-managed right off the bat from there as well. So I kind of made two major changes at once.
And I always say the choice you make on management could be the biggest decision you make in the short-term rental game. Management is the Achilles heel of the business. And you just articulated it very well by saying, if the goal is to have a 1% property, you cannot operate in the top 1% without a top 1% manager. And so whether that's you or somebody that you hire, and I always say, I mean, we go through a painstaking process that we do not like, that I don't enjoy, and really trying to find the right property manager for our properties, because I don't manage my own properties. And some markets, it's very difficult to find a top 1% property manager. And so like for me, like my process early on actually changed. I used to have the partner section after we located the markets we went to. I changed it to where we have a 9-step process. The third step is partner. The next step is locate. And so I did that. The main reason I did that is because I won't go into a market unless I can find a 1% manager, because I've done it the opposite, where I've gone in, and those are some of the lessons learned after 20 years of doing this, is I don't want to select, if I know I'm not managing my property, I don't want to select a market and then not be able to find a 1% manager. And so you're right, I was talking about management on the Whiskey Wednesday recently, and we were talking about that it's very interesting. Like, I'm a firm believer that 90% of people shouldn't manage their own properties for a lot of reasons, but I'm also a firm believer that your top properties are going to be self-managed. And so it's a very interesting, like, it almost sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, and you really have to understand the whole management process to understand what I'm saying, because I have 1% properties. I don't manage my own properties, but I take a very specific approach to it. And to your point, you've got a property now where you said, hey, listen, we're going to ramp up, level up. We're going to create this new immersive experience. We're also going to self-manage. Two major changes going into that second year of operations to say, hey, how are we going to level up? So tell me how that all worked.
Yeah. We relaunched in September, and, you know, I know a lot of the hesitation with self-management, and I asked the same question, is this really going to become like my second job? Like, this is going to be a lot of work. Am I going to be getting calls in the middle of the night, guests complaining, and just constantly dealing with issues? And I get that. That hasn't been the case for me. And I think things will go wrong. So there's, I guess, there's some luck to it, but I think it's more preparation, right? The reasons that you're not getting bombarded with questions is because we put so many hours in creating guidebooks, right? To answer all the questions and getting people the information that they need upfront, automating the messaging through OwnerRes. And so I'm using all the tools with Price Labs and OwnerRes and, you know, tracking metrics with RankBreeze. And so I try and leverage as much of the technology as I can. And the things that do take my personal time, for the most part, are communicating with guests if they have a question. And I don't mind that, because that's part of the experience. And I've gotten so many reviews on our property around, wow, host was so responsive, answered all of our questions. And like, that is a huge part of guests, you know, when they remember something about your property, was the host responsive, and did they get me when I needed it? Right.
Yes. So that means the number one thing you get reviewed on is communication. It's truly the standard that guests judge the manager or the host on, is how well did they communicate? Were they available to answer my questions? Did they set great expectations? You're exactly right. You save yourself so much time by just having very specific guidebooks, you know, very specific instructions on how to use stuff and where to navigate it. And then being available when they do have a question and being able to respond pretty quickly when they do have a question. And that's one of the things for me, it's difficult for me to respond. Like, my days, typically I'm back to back to back in meetings and podcasts and different things. And so somebody might have a problem at 10 o'clock this morning, and they might not get a response from me until 5 o'clock tonight. See, that's a problem for me to be able to manage, even though I could answer everybody at 5, that's not a great guest experience. And so that for me is the number one reason my availability is not available to answer back. And sometimes it's such simple stuff. Like you said, it's not that big of a deal. People always think that there's a whole bunch of problems to deal with, and you hear the horror stories. Knock on wood, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. You've been doing this for over a year now. Those aren't the issues you typically have. There are things that go wrong. Inevitably, if you do it long enough, you're going to have an issue that you have to deal with. You need to make sure it's timely. But most of the time, it's just simple communication. It's just simple. Yeah, awesome. The light, you know, the vacuum's in this closet. Sometimes it's as simple as that, right? It's just little things that they have a question about, and it's not really problems. I was listening to I'm in a coaching program, a mentorship program, and there's another Airbnb coach in there, and this person was talking, the mentor coach was talking about a business system. We weren't even talking about Airbnb or anything. And he was using them as an example. And he was talking about having systems in place to deal with problems. And they said he made this outrageous, outlandish problem. He said, so, you know, when somebody comes into your house and they're on their way out and they leave you a parting gift and they take a crap right on the front, in the front room, and they leave. And he's just being very, like, you know, just kind of very outlandish and saying, but, you know, if you, somebody's calling you and you have a system for that and you can help them solve it, blah, blah. Well, this guy's like, you won't believe that. That's happened more than once to me. And I'm just thinking to myself, you're so full of shit. That has not happened. I've been doing this for a long time. I've never even heard that happen. And if it did happen, it didn't happen more than once, for sure. But, that's where people, they hear stuff like that and they hear somebody repeat that. And then they think, well, that's the stuff you're dealing with as a self-manager. And I don't want to deal with those problems. That's not the case. That's not what you deal with, right? You're typically dealing with really happy people asking you a question or two.
Yeah, and that's like the fulfilling part of it, is that the vast majority of your experience are with people who are happy to be at your place, having a wonderful time with their family and making memories, and you can kind of be a part of that. Yes, you will deal with a random thing here and there that makes you just want to reach out and slap someone, but in general, that's not the case, right? And so
it's fun. You're right. They're sharing some sometimes very personal, intimate experiences and with you, and you're a part of that. And it's very, like, it can be really heartwarming to be, you know, when somebody's thanking you for, you know, such an amazing place to stay. Like, we had one lady, I've told the story, I think, before on the podcast, but we had a lady stay at our property, and they were, it was her husband who just passed away. It was their favorite place to go visit. And so they booked it after he passed away to just kind of go and mourn and reflect. And she was like, man, just thanks for having this for us. Thanks for, like, having it set up the same way I remember it when I visited with my husband, and it was his favorite place to come. And they're sharing these things, and you're like, man, you know, thanks for letting us be a part of that. And, you know, or engagements, or, you know, anniversaries and birthdays. And, like, there's a lot of really, you know, different momentous occasions for a lot of people that they're super grateful to for that we set these properties up the way we do. But then they share that with us. And like you said, it's part of the fun of being in the hospitality space, is hearing that stuff. It can be a lot of, like, it's pretty, you know, that's more the normal. That's not that's more the majority of the type of things you're sharing, and not the guy leaving a crap on the front doorstep for you, right?
I haven't had that yet, knock on wood.
No, I've never even heard of it. So I've been doing it for 20 years. And so that was the first time somebody claimed it happened to them twice, which I'm not buying.
Yeah. And so, you know, with that particular property, and I think I posted this just maybe a month or so ago. September 1st essentially was 1 year at the property, and I had exactly 1 year with Vacasa before Vodacy, and I had exactly 1 year self-management after the Vodacy kind of makeover, and I kind of showed a side-by-side comparison, and I essentially doubled my revenue in 1 year, right? So went from, I think, 75,000 gross to 137,000 gross. And, you know, expenses were generally the same. And all of my upfront costs were just in that, you know, that first year. So all that setup cost was a one-time cost with Mike and O2O and, you know, any and stuff. So, if I kind of maintain this momentum or better, you know, I could be essentially paying back, making back everything that I put into the property within 2 years.
That's phenomenal. And congrats on that. And again, I mean, that those of you listening, that to take a property that is, like, it's already there, same property, same market, same proximity, everything else, making two major changes, management and creating an immersive experience. And on these shows, we always put links to our guest properties, so you guys can go check these out and see. But this property went from $70,000+ to $137,000, almost doubled in revenue. And, you know, those are the reasons you make those tough decisions, you know, in previously, and to say, hey, listen, I want to make an educated decision. I want to figure out, does this work? And the whole time I'm doing it, I'm going to say, like, hey, Sean, are you sure these numbers are right? Hey, how much do you trust their DNA? I mean, how many times did we talk on coaching calls and stuff, and we're like, how much do we trust this? I'm like, listen, no data is perfect. Like, I'm not here to tell you it's perfect, but we have a lot of trust in it and the way that we use it. And now what an amazing side-by-side comparison, year over year, you know, almost an identical time period of the year, 12 month versus, you know, the previous 12 month versus the current 12 months, to double in revenue. I mean, it's so awesome. I'm so proud of you. And it's so fun to hear those stories.
Yeah. And I know for a fact, I'm probably the top performing condo in that, right, in that area, right, in the whole town, really. Cause you know, there are some, the condos are really just centered more like in the downtown area. And of course there are bigger homes, that have potentially similar, similar revenue or a bit more, a couple luxury, ultra luxury properties. But you know, when we look at the AirDNA data, I think the luxury numbers for our market for three bedroom was, you know, 115. Right. And so AirDNA was under what essentially I was able to do. And I think I'm already tracking for this year to be even more. With, you know, we chatted about it recently. I didn't want to mess with a good thing with, you know, rates and everything. And just because, you know, I had about 65% occupancy, which I felt was pretty good. So I'm going to kind of go with the momentum I have. And I'm already seeing numbers, you know, month over month from last year be better than the previous year. Because I now have that momentum behind me and I don't have to deal with launch pricing and starting from zero reviews and all of that.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Now you're maximizing it. You're going to make small changes. Like we said, we don't make a, you know, it's performing really well. That's not when we go in and change a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to make minor adjustments to price, see where the consumer says, hey, here's where the high watermark is going to be. Because when you're setting a high watermark, you're kind of guessing, right? You're really testing what the consumer is willing to pay for it, but you have done a really good job of giving the consumer a reason to pay more, right? And like you said, you're in a condo complex. There's other condos the same as yours, and they're not making as much money as you are. And there's reasons why. You weren't making you doubled your revenue in 1 year by making some additional changes and making some, you know, decisions that were not easy decisions, right? How much money was involved in the renovation? Not in the acquisition or anything, because you already owned the property, but you ended up going in and renovating and revamping that property with the customized artwork and stuff. So what was your capital infusion?
Yeah, so luckily the building itself, the condo, is only 4 years old, so I didn't have to do actual reno work. So all of the, it's a 1,400 square foot three bedroom place, and so it was about $45,000 of essentially interior redesign work with Mike, and then you know another $10,000+ for the whole kind of photo O2O experience. I did do the interior paint. The whole interior was painted at about $7,500 or so. So basically that upfront in, like, to do kind of the full Vodacy experience from when I purchased it, was what, that a little over $62,000.
Yeah. So that's 100%, more than 100% return on the money year one, right? You upped your revenue by 70 grand. And you have less than 70 into it. So we're like a 10 month payback on that. That's pretty phenomenal. It's 100% return on that investment. And then next year, you're going to get that same return, then the same return. So that investment you made is going to now start to give you some exponential type returns and allow you to recoup all of your capital after a 2 year period, which is pretty phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And you'll be able to say, hey, listen, we want to do it again. And it's, you know, it's awesome. So speaking of doing it again, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So even before that whole year had wound up, so December is like the biggest time in the Leavenworth market. It's a huge Christmas market. You kind of go there to feel like you're in a European, you know, village with the snow and the mountains all around you, the lights everywhere. So, I mean, we're at close to 100% occupancy in that month. It's just back to back to back to back of people who wanted to kind of come through the town. When that kind of passed, and so we got through like Oktoberfest, which is another, you know, big time in October out there. November is supposed to be kind of a down, you know, down month in a mountain town, and it wasn't for me. And I'm like, wow, this is taking off pretty quickly. And December was fantastic. People started booking out the ski season in January and February. And, you know, by mid-January, I started getting the itch again. I'm like, you know what? I think I could do this again. And so that's when I started looking for the second property. And I went, you know, a complete 180 from, you know, so Leavenworth is only 2 hours from Seattle. So I can kind of just drive out there and go, you know, do something if I need to, especially when I was working with Mike. Simple things like we had all the boxes shipped to my house and I was able to stage it all and I just have it. And then we would, you know, plan how to get it all over the property. I ended up buying my second place, a 5-bedroom cabin in northern Minnesota.
not exactly 2 hours away.
Yeah. So yeah. Like I said, we have family in Duluth, but this is about 2 hours north of Duluth, right off the north shore of Lake Superior. So we got a 5-bedroom cabin in a town called Lutzen. And this is a property that, of course, I had committed to the Vodacy experience from the beginning, right? I had done it as I was supposed to, with the market analysis and looking for the right partners ahead of time. So I had a plan going in and knew what I wanted to do. I think one thing I did underestimate was how much more difficult it is to set up a property remotely, right? Like that, completely remote, right? It's one thing to be 2 hours away. It's another to have, you know, a remote, I mean, it's not even like, it's not like Minneapolis we're talking about. This is like a remote area. And so just, this is a 3 hour, you know, 3 hour flight. It's another 4.5 hour drive just to get to the property. And I think I truly underestimated how much work it was going to be to do a fully remote setup. There was, of course, a lot of relying on people on the ground for even the simplest of things that you think should be so simple, or getting a box put into the house, or, you know, getting it out of the rain. It was something, I think. And I think part of that whole process, one of the things that led to the kind of, not only the underestimation of the work, but the underestimation of how much money it would cost, because everything that you can't do yourself, you have to have someone else do. And you have to pay everyone to do everything. And this is a 5-bedroom cabin. This wasn't a condo on a resort. And so you're already dealing with remote areas with, you know, labor shortages. Things are more expensive in remote areas. So just getting contractors up there, because we had to do a lot more work. We had to do a new flooring, and I had to rip out a swim spa and all new interior paint again. And so a lot more kind of renovation type work. But I worked with Ann on this particular property because, again, even with working with Mike, even just being 2 hours away, it was so critical and how valuable Mike's, not only his experience, but just like the execution of it all and the planning of it all. So certainly getting, like, if you're doing a remote setup, having someone like Ann or Mike manage a large chunk of it, I think is, I honestly don't know how I would have done it in less than a year and a half if I didn't have, you know, a couple full-time people working on some of this stuff. But I mean, especially for folks that are like looking in rural areas, there are things that, I mean, you wouldn't even think of when buying a property, but like even getting packages delivered to rural areas can be a challenge. Oh, are you, USPS doesn't deliver to the house. They only go to the tiny little, you know, Lutzen post office.
And by the way, you can't send big packages there. We won't hold stuff.
If you send a big package, they call you and yell at you and say, get it right now. We can't hold it.
We don't have space for it. Yeah.
We had packages just completely go missing and we had no idea. And so the whole setup phase for that particular property took a lot longer than I had thought. It was a lot more work. I had to make 3 visits out there and like hardcore 4 or 5 days of not stopping, barely sleeping, just cranking through stuff. And even with, you know, having someone like Ann or Mike do the full-time install, this property and probably others have this experience, is it was kind of like death by 1,000 paper cuts, right? It's not the furniture setup and the design, because we're paying Ann to do those things. it was everything else, every tiny little other thing that is not part of just design and furniture that can really get you. And we bought the place furnished, and I didn't want any of the furniture, but it was there. And now I have a 5-bedroom house with furniture that I'm not that. And what am I going to do with all this stuff? And these are the things that, so anyone looking for like a, you know, to do a property remotely, totally can do it. Obviously, it's just, it's a lot.
The logistics of it are so overlooked on those remote properties, those rural areas, even if you're close, it's still very difficult and challenging because who's going to receive everything? Where are you going to stage it all? How are you going to get rid of all the boxes and the trash and everything else? And there's just every little thing you do, especially if you're not there, has to be paid for. Somebody's going to do it. And like you said, like just trying to make sure that when you're looking at those areas, you're like on paper, you're like, man, beautiful area, love this property, has good potential, but I got to get from point A to point B. And sometimes we overlook what that actual journey looks like from point A to point B of getting that sucker set up and ready to launch.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even have trash pickup at the place. Right. And that's probably fairly common in like rural cabin areas. And I have never once owned a property without trash pickup. I'm like, what do you mean? And so now I gotta, you know, make sure my cleaners take it out. But of course, they're only doing that when the place is getting rented and guests. But like from a setup perspective, it's like you're bringing in a dumpster and you're holding that thing in your driveway for months on end. And so part of the underwriting that I overlooked, or I maybe underlooked, was the holding costs to all of this, right? Which is, I had thought that I could get this property launched in 3 months. And it took me 6 months. It took me twice the time. And that's 3 extra mortgage payments with no money coming in, right?
Yeah, the opportunity cost too, because you're in that's a very seasonal market. So depending on the time of year, those 3 months weren't on the market, that can be quite a bit of revenue, right? That you're waiting
for. Yeah, I mean, summertime is huge. And even fall time, you know, September, October, because it's in an area that's, you know, surrounded by maple trees. And so like the fall foliage is incredible. And that's, you know, some of the peak rates are in October, and I launched end of September. And I think I chatted with you about this. I'm like, I have to launch with my launch rates. Like I can't get too aggressive right out of the gate, even though this is like peak season. Like I have to think long-term here, and, you know, I got to get these reviews. I got to get people in there. So I really had to, you know, restrain myself and say, you know, I missed peak season. I'm launching during another kind of mini peak foliage season, but I had to stick to the model, stick to the process. We have launch rates, we got to get momentum. And that's really ultimately what I did. Right. So
I think it's going to definitely, we've seen it play out over and over that. That's the right decision. That's the way you do it. It's what we talk about. However, when you're in the middle of it, it's painful because you're like, man, you're literally in the middle of it right now, right? You're going into the slow season, and it really does. That's a very slow season. And sometimes if you get that the winter coming in and the snowmobilers can, you know, use it a little bit, but that's nowhere close to what your summertime rates are going to be. And so it's making sure that we're right, you know, we're riding through this period now, building it up the way we want to, launching it the way we want to, building up those reviews, getting all that stuff done so that we can really, as soon as things start to pick up in, you know, spring break, summertime, everything else, then we're ready to really roll.
Yeah. And luckily, one of the things that I actually liked about this market is it's next to the largest ski resort in the Midwest. So, I mean, that's,
you know, so you do have a bit of a winter. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. So we're about just 10 minutes away from, the Lutzen ski resort, which is, you know, of course, coming from the West Coast or the Rocky Mountains, it's very different, but like, if you have kind of a Midwest mindset, it's the absolute best you can get
where you're going.
In the Midwest. And so we've started booking up, January, February already. People are already getting on the calendar. We've got, I think, 5 or 6 5-star reviews. And so we've generated a little bit of good momentum. We're in kind of that November lull right now, but we got, you know, peak rates for Christmas and New Year's all booked out. And so I'm seeing some really good positive momentum on the place. And one thing about this place, and also around like the Leavenworth place as well, that just as I've kind of looked back, I don't know if I did this on purpose, but just from kind of like a lesson learned perspective, is that when I was doing market analysis for this place, the Lutzen place, and then redid it for the Leavenworth condo, I wasn't finding a lot of good comps. And the reason being is because there's not a lot of comps with the amount of bedrooms, right? There's not many three-bedroom condos in Leavenworth at all. They're mostly two, one, or studios. And there are even fewer five-bedroom homes in the Lutzen market. And some people might go, oh, you know, that's, I'm not getting good comps. I don't know if I can trust these numbers. I look at it as these are opportunities because it's less crowded at the top, right? Yep. Which is, I look back.
There are opportunity zones. There's less people you're competing with. It makes it easier.
Exactly. Yeah. And when I'm looking back, my kind of advice is buy properties that are difficult to replicate in the sense not that it's impossible to build more three-bedroom condos in Leavenworth, but it's not going to happen overnight, and nor is it going to happen on any type of scale because there's not really any land left, right? Lutzen, there's a lot of place to build, but it's tough to build, right? I mean, you build from scratch. And so it's one thing to like, get a three-bedroom, and now you join in with all 2,000 other rentals that are out there, and you have to compete against them. Versus, again, you have to spend more money, but I bought a five bedroom and there aren't many. And that in and of itself is a differentiator, right? And it is a lot harder for people to enter the five bedroom market without, of course, building a new one.
Right. Yeah. And it's such a good, I mean, we always say, right? And you just said, buy properties that are difficult to replicate, right? The consumer loves different. They love that differentiation. They love unique. They love personalized. And so when you automatically can, limit the amount of supply or properties that you're competing against, it's always a really good thing, right? And so, and you eliminate them by a lot of different levers. And one of them that you're talking about is the size of the property. If there is a market that you see, man, I'm having a difficult time pulling comps because there's a whole bunch of two bedroom condos and one bedroom condos, but not threes. Well, maybe threes, maybe that is that opportunity zone. Some of these markets with some of these larger properties, there's a handful of them on the market. And they're, the smaller ones are a dime a dozen. Well, that's an opportunity zone with those bigger ones. And so look for those little opportunity zones within these markets.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know it's, with the amount of upfront investment on a short-term rental, it can be, again, daunting to say, when you're looking at properties and you got like a three-bedroom here or a five-bedroom there, that costs $150,000 more or whatever it is, $200,000 more. It's like, but having that long-term view is that, hey, this is actually, it is a built-in differentiator. I'm still going to do the whole Vodacy experience, but it really limits the competition. And so I know when you go, if you're looking in the North Shore and you want 14 people, my house is coming up in those first three places.
Right. It doesn't matter what you do. So you automatically are going to get the exposure. Now it's your job to convert those customers with this, like you said, that Vodacy signature recipe that we talk about. Then it's game over, right? You're building multiple moats around that property there's multiple things that are hard to replicate. And that becomes a pretty fun game to play. We always say try to compete in a category of one, right? And which means we need to do what it takes to eliminate our competition. And those are all certain things that we can do. And I always say there's not usually one golden or not one silver bullet. There's a whole bunch of golden BBs. And these are all little things that we're looking at. And so great, great piece of advice. Man, James, you and I think could sit and talk for, 2 hours.
I think about this stuff all the time. So it's good to just
I love it.
ripping off someone else because my wife is sick of it, so she doesn't want to.
She's like, "This is your thing. Go talk to somebody else, man. This has been awesome. We might be needing to do part two of this in the near future, but this has been a great conversation. I've very much enjoyed it. I know that we will get great feedback from it. Is there any? If you said, "Hey, listen, I always ask if there's one piece of advice you would give your younger self before you jumped into all this stuff that somebody else could use." I know that we've dropped a lot of nuggets and a lot of things where people could accelerate their progress, avoid some mistakes throughout our entire conversation. But is there something that you want to put an exclamation point on as we end out the conversation?
Yeah, I mean, taking kind of like a step back from like the short-term rental space specifically, or any one of those properties, you know, I was kind of brought up in a household where, like, you know, the message was kind of like, you know, you're going to work for 40 years, you're going to save diligently, and then you're going to retire, you know, at 65. And I kind of had this mindset that that's the path you take, right? You know, this is, I'm just going to put in the grind, you know, put my nose to the grindstone and work 40 years. And this, this concept of being a business owner, you know, my parents weren't entrepreneurs. And so I never kind of initially had this entrepreneur mindset. I wrongly like correlated it with owning some sort of brick and mortar shop or inventing something like really cool. I never really considered, you know, building a business around real estate this way. And the idea that you can, there are other paths to like financial freedom and, you know, financial literacy than just, you know, going that kind of 40-year path. And not that it's a wrong path, but I everyone kind of says, you know, I wish I had started sooner, and that's all generally true. But just to know that there are other paths out there where you can kind of take control of your financial future, and you are not bound by whatever happens to you at a job, or if someone decides they don't need you anymore and that's it. It's really kind of just, you know what, no one is going to pick me up but myself. And so building kind of something that I've created and that can produce income in the future, that helps reduce my reliance on other people. I maybe came to that message a little late in the game, but it's been 5 years where I've kind of started stoking that flame and getting into this. And now I consider myself like a business owner, an entrepreneur. I didn't necessarily invent AI or anything, but I mean, this is, you know, this is a path that you can take, and you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to go to business school or, you know, have this crazy entrepreneurial mindset to be successful in this.
I love it. I love that message so much. And, you know, myself, a lot of our listeners, we buy into the fact that nobody's coming to save us, right? We're saying, hey, listen, it's about personal responsibility, self-reliance. And we're going to build that life that we don't want to take a vacation from. I say all the time, but that really comes down to saying, hey, listen, the path that you're on doesn't have to be the path that you stay on forever. It's okay to give yourself other options. It's okay to look into other things. And to your point, you might not have the best invention in the world or the next, you know, pet rock idea that's going to make you millions, but there's pretty fun paths to run down in a lot of different avenues. And we tend to enjoy the short-term rental and the real estate world, where you can build these little businesses and give yourself options. Again, you might not be quitting your job tomorrow. In fact, most of our clients, that's not their goal when they come in, is to create this business that they're done tomorrow, right? They're saying, hey, listen, I've got a great job. I've got something that's paying the bills. I want to take that money, and I'm going to use that time and that effort of that earned income, but also my extra time, and I'm going to put it towards something else. And then this thing starts building. And like you said, you've been focused on it for 5 years. You start to identify with your, like, hey, you identify now as an entrepreneur, which you are. And you're like, hey, listen, this is different than the way I was raised. And it's different than the 40-year path and a 401k and pensions and retirement funds. And that's all great. What if you have that and real estate, right? And you can have it all. And so don't sell yourself short. One, that you have to stay on the same traditional path. But also, even if you're on that path, and that's okay, and you want to say, maybe there's something more for me, don't be afraid to take that next step. Don't be afraid, because nobody's going to do it for you. You can stay on that 40-year path for 40 years and look back and say, man, I wish I would have tried that. But I prefer you to say, in 5 or 6 years to look back and say, man, I'm glad I did that. And, it's a much funner, in my opinion, phrase to say and attitude to take is let's take some action. Let's do it. And I appreciate you sharing that. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
So guys, you guys listening, we know how valuable your time is. I know that you guys like these conversations as much as I do. I could talk to James all day. I just told you that. I could, like you said, this is stuff I enjoy talking about. I know you guys like it and listening in. These are our most listened to and watched episodes, and we very much appreciate you spending your time with us. We know it is valuable. We hope you got value out of it. I know I do every single time I have these conversations. I always say nowadays, when I started Vodacy and I wrote a book and I was the only one in the game 20 years ago and I didn't know anybody to talk to. I was kind of making this up as I went along and I had this process and this blueprint I put together. And now I don't even take credit for the blueprint, because of people like James and our entire Vodacy family and investors who are willing to go out and raise the bar. And we have this collective experience and collective knowledge now that all of you can tap into. And I'm so grateful that we do have community, we have investors like James that are willing to come on and share their experience so that all of us can learn, myself included. And I love these conversations. And so I always ask you guys a couple favors. If you do enjoy these conversations as much as I do, share the show. And we don't run ads or sponsorships. We don't do anything to promote the show other than word of mouth. And so if you guys like it, go give us a thumbs up on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. If you have more than 30 seconds, leave a review. Those things help us and they help the show spread and other people walk into this game with their eyes wide open and be a part of these conversations. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, and that goes right to James's final point, is pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening and we'll see you on the next episode.